The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
We'll now move on to orders of the day. And we'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 2:53 on the clock, and we will finish at 3:53. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Today, Capitol Health has started ramping down their services to Nova Scotians in anticipation of a strike. Real Nova Scotians are now facing actual service cancellations and postponed important medical procedures. In other words, Mr. Speaker, patient care is now already at risk, despite what the Premier says. My question to the Premier, will he tell the House today how he plans to protect patient care starting now?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as all members of this House would know, and indeed all Nova Scotians know, there are challenges between the employer, which is Capitol Health, and NSGEU when it comes to providing nursing services in the Capital Region. As they would also know, that the process is unfolding through the collective bargaining process. We are, like all Nova Scotians watching it, encouraging both sides to get back to the table to ensure that Nova Scotians have the services that they need and want when they want them.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary. That's what you guys get for bending the mic, see? Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What Nova Scotians know is that their Premier told them that he would protect their health care. But today, real notices are going out about cancelled health care procedures, tests, and otherwise, Mr. Speaker. They are not protected today, Mr. Speaker, because of the anticipation of a strike. Premier says that he's disappointed in the actions on both sides and the amount of rhetoric that is being displayed in the media as the negotiations go on. Yet he himself has jumped in with his own overheated rhetoric, Mr. Speaker, making matters worse. He is the one that threatened nurses by questioning their licenses and telling them that they were in violation of their code of ethics. Mr. Speaker, I will table those quotes for the benefit of the House. I will ask the Premier, how does questioning the integrity of nurses help protect patient care?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition couldn't be more wrong, quite frankly. We've continued to actually tell Nova Scotians the valuable contribution that nurses make in the healthcare system in this province, Mr. Speaker. They do operate under code of ethics, Mr. Speaker, and the Leader of the Opposition would know that it's College of Registered Nurses that would be the person and the body that those RNs and nurses would report to, Mr. Speaker. What we have clearly said is that in these very difficult times around bargaining, we would like both sides to get back to the table to ensure that we find an agreement that both sides can live with and that Nova Scotians actually receive the health care services when they want them, at the time they want them, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, actually it's the Premier that is mistaken. What Nova Scotians want is a Premier that says the same thing and that saying something is not the same as doing something. They are looking for action now that real medical tests and procedures are being cancelled or postponed. And what I mean by that, Mr. Speaker, is that in opposition, the Premier actually encouraged the government of Nova Scotia to get involved in a labour dispute at Capitol Health between the health authority and their workers. And he said at that time, just a year ago, and I quote, they, meaning the government, are the employer. So it's important for them to make sure that they solve these disputes as quickly as possible without a labour interruption. And I'll table that for the benefit of the Premier, Mr. Speaker. 1 week ago, he said exactly the opposite, that he himself is actually not the employer, even though Nova Scotians know who ultimately is paying the bills and pulling the strings. So you know what, Mr. Speaker? It's time for straight answers. Will the Premier get to the point today when real procedures are being cancelled and tell Nova Scotians the plan to protect their patient care?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as you know, anytime there is this kind of negotiation that's moving very close to what potentially could be a labour disruption, there are lots of anxieties going not only, Mr. Speaker, through those that are involved in it from a working point of view, but obviously those Nova Scotians who are receiving and looking to receive that services. That's why we've continued to encourage both sides to get back to the table, the employer, which is Capitol Health, and the NSGEU, which is the union representing the nurses in the Capitol Health. And, Mr. Speaker, I'll go one step further. Nova Scotians know that if there's one leader in this House who goes back on his word, it's not the Premier, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also through you to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, 2,300 registered nurses throughout the Capital District Health Authority will be in a legal strike position on April the 3rd. At the heart of this dispute, Mr. Speaker, is that nurses are regularly working shorthanded. And I'm sure all members of this House are hearing from nurses who are very concerned about patient safety, as well as their own health and safety, Mr. Speaker. So my question through you to the Premier is this. Will the Premier tell us what he is doing to reassure nurses that they are respected and they are heard?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, our government continues to ensure that Nova Scotians have access to health care where and when they need it, Mr. Speaker. It is extremely important that we recognize that the valuable contribution that all health care providers provide to the people of this province. I want to remind all members of this House that it is Capitol Health, who was the employer in this dispute, Mr. Speaker, who is now dealing with the NSGEU, Mr. Speaker, and through a number of times, Mr. Speaker, through collective bargaining agreements across this province, unions and their employers have been able to work out the ratio when it comes to ensuring that the proper levels of staffing are happening in all various aspects of delivering health care to this province.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, since contract talks have broken off, the Premier has done little more than add fuel on the fire by stating that nurses should face discipline before their licensing body if they take job action. And Mr. Speaker, he made these statements before the provincially appointed mediator had even brought the parties together. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to have the Premier explain how exactly such comments could be a constructive intervention into this dispute, especially at such a critical point in the negotiating process.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is our sincere hope that both the employer and the union will go back to the table. We've encouraged them at every turn to go back to the table so that we can try to find a negotiated settlement that would allow both sides to continue to provide the services to Nova Scotians that they require and that they want, Mr. Speaker, and it is our sincere hope that that happens. I want to remind the members of this House, Mr. Speaker, this contract has been outstanding, Mr. Speaker, for almost 2 years now. We've been in power for 6 months, Mr. Speaker. We are now, while this is a difficult challenge for all Nova Scotians, we are watching, allowing the collective bargaining process to happen, Mr. Speaker, but we, at the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, will make sure that Nova Scotians are protected when it comes to delivery of health care services.
Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier may only have been the Premier for 6 months, but he sat in this House for many, many years and said many, many things about the collective bargaining process. And let me remind him that he told Nova Scotians when he sat on this side of the House that he believed in collective bargaining, yet we saw just 28 days ago a reversal on that position with the home support workers, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Premier, why does he no longer believe in the collective bargaining process?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, thank you. I thank the honourable member for the question, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind all members of this House that 28 days ago we brought in essential service legislation that actually protected the right to strike for health care workers, Mr. Speaker. All we asked for, Mr. Speaker, what we asked for was that before job action took place, that we ensured that the essential services of health care delivers in this province. But I want to remind the leader of the New Democratic Party that there has been a time in our history when the right to strike was taken away from health care workers. It was from paramedics not too long ago, Mr. Speaker, under the New Democratic government of Nova Scotia. So the only party in this House who's taken away the right to strike in recent history has been the New Democratic Party.
Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to return to the theme of leaders that are consistent in what they say to the people of Nova Scotia. When he was running for office, the Premier told the Cape Breton Post that he wouldn't legislate against work stoppages in the health care system. And I'll quote directly. The Premier says, "The Liberals have no plans to legislate against work stoppages in the health system," the Premier says. Mr. Speaker, hospital workers took him at his word on that. But, of course, that was when he was trying to get their votes, Mr. Speaker. Now we're all waiting to see what the plan is of the government to protect patient care. So my simple question to the Premier, who said one thing 6 short months ago and is going to do the opposite now, which statement should Nova Scotians rely on today? What the Premier said when he was running or the ones now?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we're going to allow the collective bargaining process to continue, Mr. Speaker. It's our hope that the employer and the union will come to the table to ensure that they find an agreement, that both sides are satisfied, that will ensure that we provide the services to Nova Scotians. And at no time, Mr. Speaker, have I or our government in any way removed the right to strike away from health care workers in this province at any time, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we are soon going to have a strike on our hands at Capitol Health with the vital services that nurses provide. Surgeries and labs and clinics are going to be scaled back or cancelled or closed. The Premier has inflamed the situation by questioning the ethics of nurses, threatening to refer them to their own college of nurses. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians do not want to see the end of their health care service or even a gigantic reduction in health care services. Can the Premier assure Nova Scotians today that their health care will not be lowered, reduced, or otherwise stopped due to a contract dispute?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, unlike the leader of the Conservative Party, I believe in the collective bargaining process, Mr. Speaker. We are allowing the collective bargaining process to happen. Mr. Speaker, there are some challenges, but I want to assure all members of this House, Mr. Speaker, that this government believes in providing Nova Scotia with the quality health care, and that will be identified when our budget is delivered, Mr. Speaker, in a week.
Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Oh, Mr. Speaker, I guess the answer to that question is no, he can't assure them that their health care services won't be lowered or reduced or otherwise impacted over the next few weeks. And I remind the Premier that everything he says today is recorded in this House and it'll be here for the benefit of all Nova Scotians next week to see compared to what he is saying now, just like it was recorded 6 months ago in the election campaign. Mr. Speaker, every Nova Scotian would agree that nurses are vital to our health care system. The care they provide is second to none. Nurses insist that their staffing levels on our wards and hospitals is inadequate and that they are overworked and stressed out. Premier, of course, is trying to silence them on this issue by threatening to take them to their own college of nurses. My question to the Premier, the person responsible ultimately for the health care system, has he taken any steps to assure himself that our hospitals are, in fact, adequately staffed?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we continue, Mr. Speaker, to monitor the situation to ensure, Mr. Speaker, that health care will be provided to Nova Scotians. I want to remind the Leader of the Opposition that we are not the employer, Mr. Speaker. It is Capital Health. We cannot refer any nurses, Mr. Speaker, to anything. So he continues to try to find some way to move away from the point that he is against the collective bargaining process, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, we believe in the collective bargaining process. We are allowing it to unfold, and we will make sure that Nova Scotians' health care is protected, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, quite frankly, I think that Nova Scotians know full well where our party stands on protecting their health care and contract disputes. We know what the Premier is against. Honestly, we're trying to figure out what the Premier is for and what he intends to do, and we're not getting any straight answers on that today, Mr. Speaker. Well, already important procedures are starting to be cancelled or postponed. But it is the role of the government to lead and primarily to protect the health care that Nova Scotians rely on every day, Mr. Speaker. Nurses are saying that they are overworked, that they are stressed out, that there is too much overtime, that there are real wards that are understaffed. They may be right. We have to find that out, Mr. Speaker, and ultimately it's the elected government that looks after our health care system. So I will ask the Premier quite simply, what action has the Premier taken to ensure there really are appropriate levels of nursing staff in our hospitals?
Honourable Premier.
Speaker, Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Leader of the Opposition, the government is not at the bargaining table, Mr. Speaker. That is the employer and the union, Mr. Speaker. But I also want to remind this House that the Minister of Health, in the first 5 months of being the Minister of Health, has been travelling the province, working with district health authorities across this province to ensure that we streamline administration and health care system, ensure that we make sure they have the appropriate levels of staffing in every hospital across this region to ensure that every community gets access to health care when and where they need it at the appropriate levels. And quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, that employees who work for district health authorities and work in the health care system feel appreciated.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I know the nurses don't feel appreciated by a Premier that actually calls their ethics into question when they raise questions about whether our hospital wards are properly staffed or not. And he can point the fingers as many other places as he wants. It's his government that needs to make sure that our hospitals are properly staffed, not by threatening people who want to bargain collectively, but by doing the job of running the province, including our health care system. So I will ask the Premier, when will he take steps to make sure our hospitals are properly staffed?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to assure through you to the Leader of the Opposition and all Nova Scotians, October 22nd last year, this government started ensuring that not only were health care properly staffed, but, Mr. Speaker, that the money was being spent on frontline health care and not administration.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we're going to see over the next few days how good a job the government does at making sure those health care services are there all of the time and for everybody that needs them. Because today, Capital Health is winding down real health care services to real Nova Scotians. That means everyday people are going without the health care services that they need, and we're here in this House, and we're ready to pass something that helps them know, without worry, that they'll get the care they need. But he doesn't answer the questions about what the plan is. We'll wait all through the weekend and into next week while more and more surgeries and other procedures are cancelled, Mr. Speaker. So I will ask the Premier, why is even a ramp down in our health service acceptable to him?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it was indeed the hope of all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, that the collective bargaining process would have worked by now and allowed that that we would have had a settlement that both sides would be happy with to allow the continue. But, Mr. Speaker, when the collective bargaining process you end up reaching the point where both union and employer find it difficult at times. They move away from conversation. It's our hope that they get back to the table so that they can make sure, Mr. Speaker, that the strike will be averted and that Nova Scotians will continue to receive the health care services that they want.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's just been 5 months since this party formed the government, and Nova Scotia is already facing its second health care strike. Back in 2007, when the Premier sat on the opposition benches, he wrote an opinion piece in which he said, and I quote, "The collective bargaining process is working in Nova Scotia. Our health care workers want to be on the job, not the picket line." Mr. Speaker, I'll table a copy of that opinion piece. My question for the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is this. Why under his government are health care workers suddenly having to go on the picket line?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I still believe, Mr. Speaker, that the collective bargaining process is the right way to solve the issues that are being faced between the union and their employer in the healthcare sector, Mr. Speaker. We're allowing that process to unfold, Mr. Speaker, and the reason, quite frankly, that we've had two challenges come up is because the previous government ignored them, Mr. Speaker, for almost 2 years.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like the member to show me any of the disputes that the former government got into with the nurses of this province. That government respected the nurses in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in 2007...
Order, please. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party has the floor.
I think I hit a nerve over there, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in 2007, the Premier said, and I quote, in the same opinion piece, "Our health care system has not been plagued with strikes or work stoppages. In the last 25 years, there have been 3 hospital strikes in Nova Scotia. Today, that's 32 years, and there have been 3. So my question for the Premier, is a plague of chaos in the healthcare system what we can expect under your government?
The Honourable Premier.
No, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, no. Mr. Speaker, when I wrote that opinion piece in 2007, I had no idea that Nova Scotians would have a government that would neglect healthcare bargaining for 4 years like happened in the previous government. Mr. Speaker, I want to assure the member and all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, that this government is going to continue to work to make sure that all those who provide services to Nova Scotians recognize they're appreciated and recognize that there's a fiscal challenge that the province is in and that we will operate and deliver those services inside of that envelope.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have one final quote from the Premier's 2007 opinion piece. And I'd like to quote this. He said, "Many of the province's healthcare workers are on the front line every day. They know what happens if they are not there to provide care to Nova Scotians when they need it. They know better than anyone else how important their jobs are and how much people rely on their care every day." So my final question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, if he believes nurses know best what they need to do their job, why is he publicly dismissing their concerns about the impact of staff shortages on public safety?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. There is absolutely no question, Mr. Speaker, that nurses and all health care providers provide an invaluable service to Nova Scotians. It is our job as government to ensure that that service will be there, but we need to allow the collective bargaining process to happen as an employer. Mr. Speaker, is working with the union, Mr. Speaker. And I want to assure all members of this, so we have heard from nurses, Mr. Speaker, who want to continue to work. They want to ensure that the service is there for Nova Scotians. And we hope, Mr. Speaker, that their union and their employer can come together to ensure that all of those get an opportunity to continue to deliver the great quality of service they have been to Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Finance. We learned this week that the Minister will table her budget on April 3rd. April 3rd is shaping up to be a terrible day for Nova Scotians. Sadly, we learned that this Liberal budget will not be balanced and that our debt will continue to increase. Well, in opposition, in 2008, the leader of the Liberal Party, said, until we conquer our own debt, we will continue to be slaves to it as well as our children and their children. And I agree with that statement. I'm sure most members of this House do as well. So my question today for the Minister of Finance is, why has the Minister chosen to allow Nova Scotians to continue to be slaves to debt rather than take bold action to conquer it?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I do appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. Again, the Member doesn't know yet what's in our budget for next week, but I have signaled there'll be a deficit, absolutely. And I think it's important for all members of the House to realize exactly how much our revenues have been hit, which I told the Chamber of Commerce this week, and how deeply we have to work hard to grow the economy. That's the best answer for us to get out of this situation, and in the meantime, we have critical services that have to be delivered.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for her answer. And it's not an answer that's unfamiliar to Nova Scotians. Nova Scotians are looking to the government for answers as to how we can do that, how we can get a plan to increase our revenues, because every day in households across Nova Scotia, people are concerned about their own debt. People are losing sleep about the amount of their debt. So my question today is, if Nova Scotians are concerned about debt, why doesn't this government seem to be concerned about it?
Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And in answer to that, absolutely, I think all members of the House are concerned about the level of debt that we carry. In the last 4 years, the debt had risen by $1.5 billion. And that's certainly something that we would like to see slow down and stop and eventually be reversed. But that isn't something you can do in a time when there's not enough revenue to balance the books at this moment. So it's really a question of how we move forward, and with the help of all Nova Scotians. It isn't government's job alone to build the economy. We have to set the stage and work with the Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for her answer, and I agree. It is the job of government to create an environment where business has a chance to be successful. And Nova Scotians are making sacrifices every day. Every day they decide what they can afford and what they can't afford. Mr. Speaker, the problem with debt is you have to service it. And our debt costs are impeding the government's ability to make the lives of Nova Scotians better. Our debt service costs today are the third highest expenditure of the government, nearly $900 million to service our debt. That's $900 million that will not go to services, $900 million that will not go to tax relief, $900 million that will not go to our health care services or education system. It will go towards our debt. And we need to start today finding an answer to bring this debt down. So my question for the Minister today is, why should Nova Scotians accept another year without leadership and a budget that will continue to enslave Nova Scotians to increasing debt and higher debt service costs?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Oh, I get up too fast. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think the member opposite has done a good job explaining the scope of the debt. The impact that it has on our annual budget is significant, and the cost really is a burden for all Nova Scotians and all of us who seek services and know that the money is going elsewhere. But that is a debt that has grown over many, many years, Mr. Speaker. A great deal of it grew during the years of the Tory government in the 1980s. A huge increase. And Mr. Speaker, it's grown over a long time, and it's not something that you can immediately turn around. So I think we have to look to the future to grow our economy, to seize a lot of the opportunities that we have in different sectors, and to really, really build up our business community, again, through creating the right environment in order to get the money that we need to start working on this big issue. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, previous to the election of this Liberal government, work stoppages in health care were about as commonplace as the Leafs making the playoffs, Mr. Speaker. But now, since the short 5 months since this crowd has been in power, we've seen that strikes by home care workers, and now they're threatening, Mr. Speaker, to cause a strike with nurses in the Capital District Health Authority. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the minister now that just a month ago they gave around $100,000 to a has-been Liberal cabinet minister from Ontario to tell the Minister of Finance how to run the taxes of the province of, of Nova Scotia. So I want to ask, are they contemplating the same, getting an outside Liberal hack to help them understand labour relations in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Mr. Speaker, I do believe hack is probably unparliamentary, so the member may wish to withdraw that particular remark for a start, but that's the Speaker's ruling. I would note, Mr. Speaker, that the person to whom he is referring is a respected woman parliamentarian, and I realize that the folks over there sometimes have difficulty with strong women, but I would note... Mr. Speaker, that in fact the member is in error. The last time the Leafs made the playoffs or won a championship, it would have been in 1967, and in fact they had a strike last year in the healthcare system. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre on his supplementary.
Speaker. Thank you. You know, to be fair to the minister, I realize that more than often than not, what befalls your department is put there by the premier, Mr. Speaker, and they're kind of forced to do the premier's bidding. So my question to the Minister of Labour, has she advised the premier that the damage he has done to the healthcare workers in this province will not be easily undone? And will she stand up for the workers of this province and not for the Premier?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would note that when the union applied and asked for a mediator, I in fact appointed a mediator. I have been pretty clear here that we expect both sides to negotiate, and we are waiting for that process to play out, Mr. Speaker. But for the member to suggest that that people aren't doing their jobs or whatever, when they, in fact, had a strike in the healthcare system, is beyond the pale.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to know what strike the Labour Minister is talking about, imaginary. There was no strike, Mr. Speaker. Anyway, Mr. Speaker, I'm going to table an article here from the Chronicle Herald where the Minister then in opposition, she was, I believe, the education critic, said that... you know, we don't believe it and take it or leave it ultimatums. We're not collective bargaining. That's what she said back then, Mr. Speaker. But just a few weeks ago, the Premier told home care workers if they didn't take the deal that was on the table, there'd be something worse there. So I want to ask that minister, Mr. Speaker, is why is she doing the Premier's bidding? Why does she support the Premier and his attack on locals and in unions in healthcare that are predominantly made up of women? Why is she leading that charge against women in the workforce, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out in another op-ed just recently, many of the people who are receiving home care are in fact women. The majority of elderly people in fact are women. So we were protecting those women who relied on that particular service. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism. As we all know, the TRAVS report was released last week, and in opposition, the Liberals agreed that the Cabinet should not, and I repeat, should not be in control of the Cabinet-controlled Jobs Fund. The TRAVS report also says that the Jobs Fund should have independent oversight. Will the minister commit to removing cabinet control from this fund.
The Honourable Minister of Economic Development.
Mr. Speaker, we welcome the report from Dr. Travis in which he did recommend that there be an independent body that would oversee decisions being made by what's currently known as the Jobs Fund. I have indicated that the Jobs Fund will be no more and that you will be seeing changes made to that body and that will incorporate the changes made by the Travis report as well. But, Mr. Speaker, actions speak louder than words. Since we have been elected, other than the Yarmouth Ferry deal, which had been negotiated by the previous administration, our government has not used the Nova Scotia Jobs Fund.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Minister, for your informative answer. We all know that's decades that we've practiced corporate handouts, and we know that it clearly doesn't work. We don't need a second NSBI or another layer of bureaucracy, to hold up important economic investments. And I'm just wondering, when will we get on with the game changers that this province needs and you show real leadership in taking those bold changes?
The Honourable Minister of Economic Development.
Speaker, she'd understand. Obviously, Mr. Speaker, as soon as we did come into office, we initiated a number of changes, number of reviews. We asked Dr. Travis to review the tools being used in economic development. We as well undertook a review of venture capital to see whether that was being used as well as it should be used to the benefit of this province. So we just received a report a week ago. We are working through that right now. As indicated, changes are coming to the Jobs Fund, and we're certainly looking forward to implementing Dr. Travis's recommendations. In fact, a lot of that work is currently already underway, and a number of initiatives have already been implemented, and I'll certainly be announcing more in the days and weeks to come.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Liberal Party ran an election based on a promise and a message that there would be no more public money for big companies. In opposition, the Premier said the following about the Cabinet-controlled fund. This is nothing more than a sham. Government should be embarrassed to stand up and suggest that this is rebranding, that this is about trying to be optimistic about the future. This is nothing more than keeping the old fund available to this Cabinet. If they really want to try something different, maybe they would have moved the investment arm out of the government to an arm's length, the business arm. My question is this a case of the Liberal Party saying one thing before the election and another after, or will the minister promise to move the investment arm out of government?
The Honourable Minister of Economic Development.
Mr. Speaker, sometimes it's a disadvantage to having been around this legislature a long time, but other times it becomes useful because I remember the 1999 election campaign. In fact, I believe the leader of the opposition may be able to assist a member because I believe he may have worked on the platform at that time for the John Hamm government, which promised that if elected, it would not use the Industrial Expansion Fund and there'd be no more handout to business. Now, that lasted about 6 months, Mr. Speaker, before Premier Hamm brought back the Industrial Expansion Fund. Now, I have to say, in his defense, he was an amateur at the use of that fund than the last government that used $800 million of taxpayers' money through that fund with little to no oversight. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, as I said in my previous answer, actions speak louder than words. Other than the Yarmouth Ferry funding, which was negotiated by the previous government, our government has not used the Nova Scotia Jobs Fund, and the Nova Scotia Jobs Fund will exist no longer once the changes are implemented.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is through you to the Minister of Health. Every day in our province, nurses are providing care to Nova Scotians when they need it the most. It's a hard job, Mr. Speaker. It's a frustrating job, and at times it can be a thankless job. But you don't have to take my word for it, Mr. Speaker. In November, the Health Minister told the Chronicle Herald, and I quote, "Nobody should have to come to work and work in an environment where there's no chance of getting a break whatsoever from the demands of a job because they're one nurse short." But today, Mr. Speaker, while nurses at Capitol Health are saying they are regularly working shorthanded and are worried about patient safety. We have the Premier in the media stating that there are enough nurses. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, through you, Mr. Speaker, does he think nurses at Capital Health deserve to be given a break when they need it, or does he agree with the Premier that they are asking for too much?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. One of the basic realities and facts about the number of nurses in Nova Scotia is that, as a group, we are well above the national average. On a given floor, a given unit, we can have, in fact, a call-in very late, you know, before a shift, and there may be times, in fact, when staff is down a little bit. But overall, we don't hear of major complaints about lack of staffing to handle, especially at the QE2, the highest levels of tertiary care. Those patients are getting outstanding care from the nurses at the QE2.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, but I'm hearing from nurses quite often over the last number of months, and what the Minister is describing is not what I'm hearing from those nurses. On February 6th of this year, the Minister wrote in the column of the Kings County Register, and I quote, "As Minister of Health, it's my job to improve the health of all citizens. To do this, we need a population that looks after its own health. One of those ways the public could look after its own health," the minister said, "was by listening to nurses, prescribing daily exercise." So my question through you, Speaker, to the Minister of Health is simple. If he thinks it's crucial for our healthcare system, for Nova Scotians to listen to nurses, why is his government refusing to do the same?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and through to the Honourable Member. You know, we first of all have the highest regard for nurses right across Nova Scotia. We listen to them. At the present time, there's a very challenging, very difficult labour dispute between their employer and the Nova Scotia Government Employees Union. And on a day-to-day basis, the work that our nurses do in our hospitals, in public health, in nursing homes, in all those areas, we will continue to listen to what they need in the profession. We know that we're fortunate to have three outstanding nursing training institutions in the province, and daily their work as a result of that great training goes into practice to provide high quality care for Nova Scotians right across the province.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I don't think the Minister came close to answer my question, but that's okay. I think that's his role. I was there at one point in time, so I completely understand. In the same article from February 6th, Mr. Speaker, which I tabled, the minister also quoted, also said, and I quote, "Imagine if healthcare works like banks," end quote, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the minister, is he going to continue to running his department like a bank, placing dollars and cents ahead of patients' safety and nurses' collective bargaining right, or is he going to start doing his job, which he says is to improve the healthcare of all citizens of our province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I think the first months have gone well as I've gotten to know the system from one end of the province to the other. I think you'll see that our budget for health this year will speak volumes in terms of wanting to improve the system, reduce wait times, and make sure that our nurses and all employees in the healthcare system are adequately compensated, and that regard for their work, in fact, will be seen as we put on the table what I consider to be a responsible and a responsive call to making sure there are dollars for Nova Scotians to get the care they well deserve.
The Honourable Member for Clare Digby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have a question for Minister Colwell, Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture. This question's response to it.
Order. I just want to remind the member for Clare Digby that the questions be directed through the chair and not refer to the minister by name.
Mr.
Speaker. The Honourable Member for Clare Digby.
Mr. Speaker, my apologies. Mr. Speaker, the lobster industry in Nova Scotia is a $1 billion industry engaging upwards of 13,000 people from Yarmouth to Cape Breton. Mr. Speaker, yesterday a historic lobster summit was held, bringing together three maritime fisheries ministers and more than 200 fishermen, processors, and industry experts to discuss the four key recommendations outlined in the Maritime Lobster Panel report released last fall. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture provide the House with an update on the importance of the summit and the industry? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm only too pleased to do that. It is an historic day today. Today we had the three Atlantic fisheries ministers and also the federal minister working cooperatively towards moving the lobster industry to a sustainable, profitable industry in Nova Scotia and indeed in Atlantic Canada. It has been an historic day, and as we continue to work together and to try to evolve these industries into a profitable industry from the wharf right through to the people that sell the lobsters in an international market. Indeed, we have to move forward and grow the economy in the lobster industry as we do in the fishing industry and the other industries that represent. So it's a pleasure to see this happening. It's a wonderful relationship we've struck with the other two provincial governments and the federal government. And it is historic. In the past, there hasn't been that type of cooperation. I'm very proud to say that our government is encouraging that, and we'll move forward to make sure that our industries are profitable now and in the future. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture. And again, I would commend the Canadian Lobster Value Recovery Summit for meeting during such inclement weather in the last 2 days. I know those have been very important meetings and have had a number of results. The Maritime Lobster Panel report that was presented 4 months ago had a number of recommendations, I believe 33 recommendations. Can the minister provide an update on where we are with those 33 recommendations in that report?
Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much. It would take a lot longer than we have today and tomorrow and next week to answer all those 33 requirements. But we are making progress in the industry. We are moving forward. We have been working with the industry sector, and we have many challenges, as all my colleagues in this legislature would know, that represent rural fishing communities. We are making progress. We will continue to work with the industry at all levels and to ensure that we have those in place, and it's extremely important that we do. This is the most important employer in the whole province, the fishing industry, and a lot of people don't realize that. We've exceeded $1 billion in export sales this year alone, and we employ roughly 13,500 people directly, but over 22,000 people in the province, by far the largest employer in the province.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to thank the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture for that answer. Mr. Speaker, there are seven recommendations in that are due within the first 6 months of 2014, and one of those is that the government immediately begin to work necessary to ensure proper legislation is prepared and ready when the industry decides to proceed with the approach. My question to the Minister is, will the Minister be tabling legislation in this session to support the changes the industry wants to make?
Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
We will not be presenting legislation this session of the legislature around that issue. Fortunately, we do not have to do that. We can do it by regulation.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I know that one of the results that came out of the summit in the last 2 days was an endorsement of the levy. I would like to ask the minister, would the minister be providing regulations to see that the levy is put in place as the industry has indicated that it wants?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
The answer to that question is yes, but first we want to consult with the industry more before we do that. It's going to be not only Nova Scotia that does this, it's going to be Prince Edward Island and New Brunswick as well. And we're working cooperatively with the other two provinces, as we will with the federal government, to ensure that we can put a levy in place that will market Nova Scotia, not only just Nova Scotia lobster, but a Canadian brand lobster that will demand a lot higher price than we get today, ultimately putting more money on the wharves and the hands of fishermen in Nova Scotia, as well as in the processors and everyone in between. So it's important we do this, important we do this in an orderly manner, and I'm looking forward to the consultation we're going to have with industry. But at the end of the day, we're going to implement that.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is through you to the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. One of the goals of the Ivany Commission was to reform municipal government and regional service structures. The Commission said the government should initiate a comprehensive review of municipal government structures with an eye to improving efficiency, cost effectiveness, and community engagement. My question to the Minister, does the Minister agree with this Ivany goal?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly the content of the Ivany report is a valid document and a document that we support. The component around municipal reform is first and foremost in my mind and the staff in our department. And over the past number of weeks, we've worked vigorously with a number of municipalities to pursue that very option.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At 8:19 p.m. Tuesday, under the cover of darkness on the eve of a storm, the Minister issued a press release, which I will table, saying the Liberal government will not contribute to a study on a regional governance model in Pictou County. Despite the Minister's anticipated commitment to the Ivany goals, he threw up his hands and walked away rather than to roll up his sleeves and work to improve the services for the people of Pictou County. Why won't the minister lead the way to a solution for Pictou County residents rather than walking away when the going gets tough?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I value the question from my colleague. I actually traveled to Pictou County on the eve of the storm and spent a couple of hours with the elected officials, mayors, wardens, and CAOs. And I shared the findings of our discussions of 2 weeks previous. And I want to assure my colleague that this government is taking the lead in municipal reform, and I'll be back to Pictou County next week to further discussions with municipalities who want to pursue another model of government.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Mayor of the town of Pictou estimates that the town has the economic resources to survive 3 to 5 years. Westville is running a deficit as the 2013-14 budget year winds to a close. Meanwhile, the Minister seems to be showing up for some meetings, but also taking a hands-off approach to municipal reform in Pictou County. Why is he prepared to watch communities that need the leadership now, not next year or the year after, while communities are dissolving, instead of working towards solutions immediately?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's exactly what this government is doing, and we continue through our travels to engage our municipal colleagues and to openly discuss and support their initiatives. We'll continue to do that, and as I said, we'll be back in Pictou County next week.
McDonnell, leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, under the previous government, the practice of March Madness, or unplanned year-end spending, was abolished. As a former Minister of Finance was fond of saying, Mr. Speaker, a penny saved should be a penny saved. My question for the Minister of Finance. Sorry, Mr. Speaker, I thought the Minister of Natural Resources had a question he wanted to ask. Can he?
Order, please. Order, please. Please proceed with your question. Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister of Finance is this. What is her government's official position on March Madness with respect to year-end spending?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question that's been asked by the member opposite. In fact, when the previous government had a program to sort of shine a spotlight on March Madness and try and put an end to it, I thought that was the right thing to do. And about a month ago, I did send a letter out to my cabinet colleagues and to those departments saying that I thought we should continue to be very alert to that. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and that's a very good minister, Mr. Speaker, who would continue that initiative that was quite successful. So my question to the minister is this. Is she aware of whether or not her directive to her colleagues in throughout the cabinet has been followed or not, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think as the member would know, certainly in the last month and 6 weeks and more, we've been doing intensive discussions with each of the departments about spending. And anything above a certain amount comes back to Treasury Board for approval, even outside of the budget discussions that we've been having. So to the best of my knowledge, the departments are well aware of the need to conserve. That doesn't mean spending stops in March, and I think the minister would be aware of that there's still some need for spending, that items arise that may not have been foreseen, but it means that there's scrutiny about that. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary. No go. The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Environment. Last fall, I was contacted by farmers in Inverness County who use wood ash from the Point Tupper biomass plant to fertilize their fields. It's a low-cost alternative to fertilize. It improves crop yields, and it eliminates having to dump it in a landfill. Now, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency maintains that it is safe for use, and I understood at the time that this government agreed. However, I'm understanding now that the government is saying no to it. Why not allow the farmers to make good use of this resource?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
I do recall the scenario that played out in the fall with respect to the wood ash, Mr. Speaker. What actually did take place is that there were some changes in the regulatory body in terms that are governing the components that make up that wood ash. There were some concerns about some of the components that make up some of the heavy metal components in that output and laying that out in our fields. The position taken in the fall was that we had inconclusive information, and we allowed the product to continue until we had conclusive information. The information has been clarified, and a new position has been taken. And I would refer Minister of Agriculture may have more to add if you have further questions about the response that they're being taken in the agricultural space to that decision.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, as I understand, all agricultural products that are sold and applied to fertilized fields have to meet the Canadian Food Inspection Agency standards, and all other provinces are following these standards. The fact that we are using a different standard here now is hurting the business case for farming operations right across the province. And the Canadian Federation of, or the Canadian, the CFIA agrees that the ash is safe and beneficial. Our farmers want to use it. Why not let them use it, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
In the case of the particular ash product here in the province of Nova Scotia, it has not been certified by the federal agency. In fact, what the Department of Environment is regulating is a waste product from the facility producing the ash. And in fact, we do have different regulations for managing waste products, and those are the regulations that my department puts in place. The product that's in question has not been certified by the federal government, as indicated. If it was, it would perhaps raise a different set of questions.
Honourable member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I understand it's now being classified as a Class B fertilizer, and I think the government needs to be careful because I also understand that that lime is considered a Class B fertilizer, and in effect, they may be suggesting that the agricultural community cannot use lime. So, Mr. Speaker, there have been decades of research to show the value and safety of wood ash to agriculture. Other provinces and states have even given environmental awards for wood ash programs. And not only has this program improved soil pH, but it's also reduced our reliance on fossil fuel fertilizers. Will the minister reconsider his decision?
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions to the ministers has expired. Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In light of the fact that this is our first day of the spring session and in light of the very productive fall session that we had, there is currently no government business on the order paper. As a result of that, that concludes the government's business for today. Mr. Speaker, we will meet tomorrow, Friday, from the hours of 9 a.m., till 1 p.m., and during that time, after the orders of the day under government business, we will be calling second reading of bills number 32, 33, and 34, which were all introduced today. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I would move that the House do now rise to meet again tomorrow from the hours of 9 a.m.